There's not a more passionate Cubs fan around, and if you're a fan of ESPN Radio 1000 in Chicago, he's undoubtedly one of your favorites as well. Very special guest coming at you right now on Locked On Cubs.
You are Locked On Cubs, your daily Chicago Cubs podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Good morning. Welcome in to Locked On Cubs. Happy Friday to you. As always, thank you for taking the time to make us your first listen each and every day. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Andrew Bellison at Chicago Cubs PA on Twitter, at Locked On Cubs for the show's Twitter handle. Gracious enough to take the time today out of his busy schedule, a favorite of mine, a huge part of the Chicago media scene, giant Cubs fan and a local guy, Sylvie of the Waddle and Sylvie Show, Mark Silverman. Mark, hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Andrew. That was a nice description too. I am shocked that I get most passionate Cubs fan description next to me. That's high praise right there.
Well, listen, I mean, I said this before we started to record. I've been a fan of yours for a long time. So let me get the fanboy out of my system. For you to take the time and stop by out of your busy schedule, I mean, honestly, it means the world to me, and I'm just really excited to talk Cubs ball with you moving forward. So thank you, really.
Of course. It's what brings us all together, right, Cubs baseball?
Absolutely. Regardless of the time of year, and I know it's been slow now with the lockout and everything, the one thing, I used to get this question a lot, and I'm sure you do as well. You grew up in the Chicago suburbs, rooting for the Cubs. You've been in the Chicago radio scene for so many years now, such a prominent figure. You've been doing it a long time, but do you ever take that step back still and kind of look at your career and say, wow, look at what I've been able to do in my hometown. How cool is that?
Yeah. And never take that for granted, right? I mean, if I waited to say every day, it would probably be overstating it. But no, I would say there's at least a moment every week, whether it's on the show, like yesterday, for instance, on Wednesday, a couple days ago, just talking to John Lester, the day of his retirement, knowing that he's doing our show first, knowing I got to ride the ride with him the entire way. And Waddle looked at me and he said, hey, did we ever have Lester as a weekly? I'm like, no, we had Arrieta the year that he was cruising and threw the no-hitter in L.A. We had Schwarber. But the one thing about while we didn't have a weekly with Lester, we had conversations with him at least monthly, every few weeks. And the thing that I always loved about him is he was always engaging. Like, he didn't want to do a weekly, but then when he would pick up the phone, when Jesse would arrange the interview, Jesse Rogers, of course, he'd be all in and he'd take every question we asked seriously and want to give you a full answer. And, you know, Waddle and I have always said we want guys who really want to be into what we're doing, you know, engaged. And Lester's one of those guys. So during this interview, I'm like, I'm talking to John Lester. He's my favorite all-time Cub. I was there in game 7. I remember game 5 of the World Series when they needed the win, that first win at Wrigley in the World Series to get back to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. You know, those NLCS games, big game, Johnny Lester. And yes, I still have the fanboy in me too, believe it or not.
I love to hear that. I mean, it's just so cool. And you led into the Lester thing. Here's the debate. What a career for the guy. I mean, obviously he was a bulldog. We saw what he did here. We know what he did in Boston. Nobody was more of a big gamer than him. This is a silly conversation because I'd rather celebrate the hell of a career he had. But is the guy a Hall of Famer?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I was pretty passionate about it yesterday. I caught Waddle by surprise. Because I really feel that we use postseason performance often to tear guys down. Mm-hmm. That, oh, this quarterback never won a championship. Oh, Charles Barkley never won a championship. How much did he really win? And here's a guy who won 3 World Series. He's a guy who got the win in a game, I think in a game 7 for the Red Sox. He appeared in Game 7 for the Cubs. Two historic franchises, one of the greatest all-time postseason pitchers. And, you know, and another thing that you just can't measure, Andrew, and you were along for the ride too, is, you know, they're going through this rebuild, and in Theo we trust. And if John Lester doesn't sign on that dotted line, even with Arrieta doing what he did in 15, are the Cubs really in the position to beat Pittsburgh in game one of the wild card? Are the Cubs really in position to beat the Cardinals and to advance? And we're like, whoa, they're here a year early. They're a World Series contender early. And I think what his signing did was it just cranked open that window. We knew the window was opening. Chris Bryant was coming that year. Schwarber came up that year. All the guys who would follow. But what John Lester did is he just completely opened the window on the Cubs' relevance, on knowing that this is a destination spot, that others who played for Theo could believe in what Theo was doing. So that's a huge thing that you just can't even measure. And then to do what he did in the postseason, what he did in the regular season, you know, I don't think you can measure starting pitchers these days like you measured starting pitchers in the Fergie Jenkins era or even in the 80s and 90s. So to me, it's a no-brainer, and you have to have a nuanced conversation about it.
I'm with you 100%, and I hope it happens. I think it will. I agree with you. Did you, you know, I remember as a kid, you know, sitting back, first time I heard Harry Carey at WGN, somehow he hooked me on the Cubs. I don't know what it was. I mean, he was past his prime. He was an older guy at the time, but just hearing him for the first time, I knew, man, this is A, what I want to do for a living, and B, I love this team for whatever reason. Do you have that one aha moment? Like, oh my God, I'm hooked on the Cubs now.
I think for me, it was the opening days I got to go to. I always tell the stories that my mom is more of the sports fan than my dad was. My mom is that Cubs diehard fan, the one who would all of a sudden scream in the middle of a game when I was like 7 years old in 1978. You know, Bill Buckner came through with a big hit or something, the Cubs just won extra innings and Jack Brickhouse is shouting through my TV. But my mom, every year we had a tradition where she would take me out of school. I would go for half a day. She'd pick me up and she'd take me to opening day every year. And I just remember, and I grew up, this is how old I am. I mean, you're so much younger than me. I grew up watching black and white TV. And so you would see Wrigley and I'd come home and I'd watch the games. But just, and I think Eddie Vedder has similar stories and others have similar stories, that you picture what Wrigley's going to be in being a 5 or a 6 year old kid. And then I could still remember just walking up those stairs from the concourse, you know, to the field box level. Mm-hmm. And then seeing that first green and seeing the colors coming at you from, you know, the ivy wasn't in bloom obviously at that point, but the green scoreboard, you know, the seats, just how it would hit you. And then the smell of it, the smell of cigarettes, beer, and hot dogs from the 70s. It's the old school smell, Andrew. And I was hooked.
And you can still smell it today.
Still, 100% still smell it today. And I've never smoked a day in my life. I would never endorse smoking. But there was something about, like, the people who would be sitting next to you, smoking the cigarettes, drinking beer, and just hearing the sounds of baseball, the organ, everything. Like, it just takes you back. And I think that's why you, me, and millions of other people, we all have that story. We could all go through the games. You know, I remember the Samberg game. I'm 13 years old, NBC. Waddle doesn't get it. He makes fun of me to this day. I still remember going to Emerson Park after the game, calling my buddy Eric Page. And we were doing what you did. We were, except faking it, we're faking, you know, like the PA calls of the Cubs lineup of Dernier, Sandberg, Matthews, you know, Durham, on and on and on, and playing, you know, fast pitch in the park because Rhino just, you know, hit two home runs off Bruce Sutter and the Cubs walked off the Cardinals in extra innings.
want to talk about 2022 Cubs and moving forward here shortly with Mark Silverman of the Waddle and Sylvie Show. Before we do, it's the new year. That means New Year's resolutions. If yours is about getting fit, you must incorporate the Built Bar into your plan. Most Built Bars contain just 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams of net carbs. They're good. They're good for you. They're covered in real chocolate, so much healthier than a candy bar, but really tastes like a candy bar. Go to Built.com today. Use promo code LOCKED15. That's LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Promo code LOCKED15 at Built.com. Mark Silverman is our guest here today of the Waddle and Sylvie Show on ESPN Radio 1000. Thank you for making Locked On Cubs your first listen each and every morning, free and available wherever you download your favorite podcast. Mark, I got to ask you, moving into 2022, I mean, you've got a great beat on this team, as good a beat as anybody. Not much cooking, right? We kind of lost out on our offseason because of the lockout. We'll get to some of the things the Cubs did before the lockout in a moment. But as a fan, like as baseball fans like you and I and so many are, I mean, do we have the right to be PO'd about this lockout, or is it just part of the business of the game and it's going to resolve itself here in the near future, we hope, before spring training, and everything carries on as if it never happened?
Yeah, no, you 1,000% have the right to be PO'd, right? I used to, as a young reporter, I would cover some of those baseball meetings between the owners and the players, and you'd see George Steinbrenner walking through the halls of like one of the Oak Brook hotels or one of the O'Hare Hilton. And those were as boring of days as I've ever covered any sport in the city of Chicago. But yeah, I mean, think about what we've been through as fans these last couple of years, not being able to go to games, being in quarantine, spring training starting in 20. Then all of a sudden, you know, everything coming to a halt in March, not getting baseball till July. The next year, they're arguing over how many games are we going to play? When are we reporting to spring training? This is going to be the third year in a row, Andrew, where we're like, okay, when does this start? And I truly believe that there's enough money to go around. I think what the owners did before that showed you that they were willing to go out and pay premiums for everything. And, you know, I've been critical on some of these teams on who they've cut during the year. Regular workers, ticket workers, public relations workers, they've got the cash. I'm not saying that these are good times, but and I'm team player. I think that the more and more they don't want to pay a 30-year-old free agent, nothing you can do about that because that's what the analytics say. Sure. So then why not give these guys a year early in free agency? So I really do feel like there are things the players should fight for. And I think being an owner is if things are good. And when they cry over these losses, it humors me.
Yeah, it's a bad look at times. I'm with you 100%. Before the lockout, I mean, they were relatively busy, right? Bringing Yan Gomes to back up Contreras, which I love. I think that's a great catching tandem. You know, Clint Frazier, the Michael Hermosillo thing kind of flew under the radar. Obviously, Stroman, which beefed up your rotation big time. The Wade Miley waiver claim from Cincinnati earlier, I think, is not talked about enough. I think that's going to be a really big deal, depending on how things shake out here. Are you happy with what they did pre-lockout? Grade them out for what they were able to get done before things shut down.
I look at it in two stages. I look at it, if we back up to the All-Star break, the trade deadline. And it's one of my most memorable shows. You know, we were out and about that day and all these deals are happening one by one. Each Cub is getting traded. And I got to tell you, like, I feel like I'm in the minority, or at least just a quieter portion of Cubs Twitter and everything like that, is I knew why they were doing that. You know, I mean, I was frustrated in what year was it when they played the Marlins and they lost at home to the Marlins in this new wild card, I think 20 in the shortened year.
Correct, yeah.
The year before that, I think in 19, they didn't make it. And in 18, you lose game 163 to the Brewers, and then you lose the wild card to Colorado. And I'm like, I love this team. I love the players. One by one, I love them. But it wasn't adding up. You know, it's the opposite of greater than the sum of the parts. It was, they were worse. And they needed to to get stuff for those players. And I thought Jed did a really good job. I love the White Sox trade. I'm a Madrigal guy. I'm team short guy all the way. I'm not a big guy, Andrew. So I know you played. I'm little. So like, and I think when all these teams are going one way, and when I've watched the Cubs all be alike, you know, basically through the lineup, I think there's a place for a guy who puts the pressure on the pitcher, yeah. A guy who is never going to strike out, a guy who's so good at on strike two, a guy who gets on base, and no, he's not going to hit for power, but I really feel like there's more than just measuring of what Nick Madrigal can bring. And I don't think there's any quantitative way to measure the stress of a pitcher when a guy doesn't strike out or just hit a home run. And so I like that Jed is open to this. So I like what they did at the trade deadline. And I like that they're in. They're in for Stroman. I like the talk of Correa. If they don't get Correa, go get Story. Go get guys who may not win it this year or may not make the playoffs this year, but guys who will be really good in 2-3 years still when you do win it. So, yeah, I'm in.
It's such a great point you bring up about Madrigal. I feel like players like that now compared to when you and I were younger are so much harder to find. It's fewer and far between, right? The bat on the ball, the prototypical leadoff hitter that I think of, you know, the Lance Johnson, that's gone. I mean, that's the game has changed so much. Yeah, I love guys like that. They're going to get on base, scrappy players, Nico Horner-esque type guys. I think that you're right. It goes such a long way for your club.
It reminds me, the comp that I always use is DeMar DeRozan with the Bulls, you know. And everyone raged against what the Bulls paid DeRozan because he's 32 and he doesn't shoot the three. So it's like Madrigal with not hitting the home run. But when you're really, really good at something, and he's good, he's a good batting average guy, he's really good putting the ball in play. Just like DeRozan's really good at making shots from 18 feet. And I'm not telling you that Madrigal is going to be the comp of DeMar DeRozan in the NBA, but I'm just telling you that while these are all tools, and I am so pro analytics, I think when you've gone too far one way, when everybody is looking for home run on base, that, you know, I feel like guys like Rod Carew and Tony Gwynn wouldn't be valued today like they were. And in my book, they're always going to be valued. And I think we're going a little far, Andrew, on the starting pitching thing, where you just want to get to the pen, where you just want to get through two times through. And I think there's eventually going to be a breaking point where everyone's playing the game the same way. And when everyone's playing the game the same way, you don't have a competitive advantage. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a greatness to zigging when other teams zag.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. You know, I was, like most, I guess, we were all kind of greedy Cubs fans, and you brought up kind of the unsuccessful playoff run after the World Series. You know, you don't win for 108 years, and all of a sudden you're a little bit ticked off that you have, you know, you make the playoffs every year, but you don't advance. How hard are we to satisfy as Cub fans? We should take that one and run, right?
Right, right. I get mad at people over this. We have this discussion all the time. The only one conversation is now the none conversation. Like if you only win one, the Cubs only won one, the 80 Bears only won one, Aaron Rodgers has only won one. You know, and I get, you know, I try not to be a White Sox hater. We were the home of the White Sox. My 7-year-old, unfortunately, at this time is a White Sox fan. I just want to love baseball. So if he's in, he's in, and then he can make his own decisions. But like a lot of Sox fans, oh, you only won one. And I'm like, well, wait a minute here. You went to the postseason in 5 out of 6 years. You got to 3 straight NLCS titles, and you won one. And I believe any White Sox fan or any fan, when you're in the heart of your compete window, if you go 5 out of 6 and win one, that is great. And believe me, I'm disappointed they didn't win a second. I think Theo would tell you that. I think Jed would tell you that they thought they would get another one. But I didn't go in my Cub fan life till 2007, 2008 was seeing back to back postseasons. They didn't win a single game in either of those postseasons. This is the golden era of Cubs baseball.
Yeah.
They gave you 15, which was so early, so not what we expected.
Yeah.
Complete joyride. And while they got swept by the Mets, beating the Cardinals, winning the wild card game, Arrieta, all that greatness, winning the next year when the target is on your back. Do you know how hard that is, how other Cubs teams buckled when the pressure of having the target on the back was there? You come from a 3-1 deficit. What was it, 2-1 against the Dodgers, 3-1 against Cleveland? Come on now. And then you win that crazy game 5 against Washington in 17. Give me a break. So, yes. Would I have liked them to win more than one? Yes, but 5 out of 6, sign me up for that for the next great era of Cubs baseball. If Jed gives me 5 out of 6 from 2023 through 2027 or whatever it would be, or at 28, sign me up.
Yeah, I'm right behind you there. Our discussion of the 2022 Cubs and beyond with Mark Silverman continues here shortly. Bet Online would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. A 50% deposit bonus for your first deposit is available. Just use code LOCKEDON at Bet Online. Sign up today. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. From basketball, hockey, boxing, football, UFC, to all your favorite Vegas casino games, Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports. Mark Silverman, Sylvie from Waddle and Sylvie, ESPN Chicago, is our guest today at Locked On Cubs. I'm Andrew Bellison. Mark, you're given the keys to pilot the Cubs plane here post-lockout. What are you doing? What's left to do? What makes you happy? What do you want to see Carter Hawkins and Jed accomplish here before spring training, hopefully when things open back up?
Yeah, it's a dangerous proposition, though. I'm in for Correa. I know it's a lot of money. I know it's a lot of years. You know, there's debate about, is he going to want 10? Will he take less than 10? He's such a good player. And I just think that your window opens up so much sooner. But if not, I want smart moves that will add to a core or get you to a better spot. I don't think we should go through another year like last year. I don't want to see August and September with just a bunch of tryouts. I know it got you Schwindel, but I would expect also as a Cubs fan not to expect that from Schwindel. It's going to be interesting to see what he brings. I mean, wisdom came back down to the pack a little bit. He had a lot of power, but a lot of the other stats weren't fantastic. But I think it is important too to get those guys around the edges, because you never know who the next. I've mentioned Arrieta a few times. I think the greatest trade in Cubs history is Arrieta and Strope. And neither of those guys came over highly hyped. Mm-hmm. But I think Pedro Strope, in my opinion, is the most underrated bullpen arm in Cubs history. And Jake Arrieta, what he did, he turned into Bob Gibson for a couple of years. They don't win without those guys. So I think a lot of those trades that could go under the radar are very, very important. So, you know, keep adding and be smart and keep building up that farm system. I'd love to see these guys who we've read about. It's one of the most fun things of the process is following them on paper or on the computer and then seeing them to fruition, and hopefully they develop, you know, like a lot of the other Cubs develop. Because, Andrew, there's a ton to player development. People think, well, he's either good or he's a bust. But I think what the Cubs did right, too, with a lot of those guys, when they came up, all of them came up and they contributed right away.
Yeah, it's a great, great point. Couple more brief hits as before we wrap up here. This is something I'm kind of passionate about, and I know you'll have a really good take on it. But growing up as a you know, mid to late 90s kid in Chicago, I loved Sammy Sosa, right? He was our hero, you know. Not really welcomed back at Wrigley Field. He's on the Hall of Fame ballot for the final time this year. Ken Rosenthal went as far to say as, you know, I will never vote for Sosa. I never have, but I'll give David Ortiz a vote, which I don't know if that jives in my mind, but hey, you're entitled to your own thing. Is Sosa a Hall of Famer, and or should he at least be welcomed back to Wrigley to throw out a pitch, sing the stretch, whatever.
Yes. Hell yes to all those. All of them. My answer is yes to everything. Sammy's not perfect, you know, and I covered a lot of those Cubs teams. I was working at WGN Radio from 95 to 98. So, right, and I covered my last year at GN was the great home run chase year. So I meant like I wasn't doing, I didn't get to do play-by-play like Andy Mazur and everybody like that. But I was in the booth with Ron and Pat. I was in St. Louis for Mark McGuire's 61st and 62nd. The Cubs had to hit the road after that 62nd home run game. So I got to do the post-game show on all those two games there. And it was fantastic. And I interviewed Sammy plenty. And look, there's a lot of what you read is true. Sometimes he was selfish. He did cheat. He did cork the bat. I think we know a lot of what a lot of the other guys were doing and what Sammy was doing and everything like that. But, you know, that's the era. And I always am a fan of telling the story. The Hall of Fame is a museum. In the museum, we don't only keep the things that were good from thousands of years ago. We keep all the bad things and we tell the story. And I believe in all of these people's description. Barry Bonds, you know, one of the greatest players with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Then when he went to San Francisco, the clouds surrounded him as he hit 70 home runs or whatever it was, you know, with a PED. Tell the story of Sam corked his bat. Put it on there. Tell the story. But 66 home runs, following it up with another 60 home run season, I believe. 30-30 before all that. There's a lot of great things that Sammy did. They sold tickets by the millions for Sammy Sosa. Yeah. They marketed him. They like, it's like the Frankenstein, you know, they created the monster. And this is my wheelhouse, Andrew, because I feel like they should bring him back. He doesn't have to work for the team, but I feel like, and what you said, one last point of what you said with Ken Rosenthal, and I love Ken and I respect Ken. Mm-hmm. I think these are all nuanced conversations. And I don't believe that you can say, well, that guy cheated, but not to the extent. How do you know? What do you know? I don't think anybody truly knows any of that stuff, who was doing it, who wasn't. So just tell the damn story.
I love that take. Can we do a little rapid fire to wrap up here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. A Bears Super Bowl or another Cubs World Series in the next 5 years? What do you prefer?
Oh, you're killing me here.
I know. I couldn't pick, I'll be honest.
If Justin Fields is like a stud quarterback, like I'm not going to turn down any Super Bowl. But like if I get the one thing I haven't had in my life is a star quarterback. Mm-hmm. Cutler flashed. McMahon had his moments, but is not his longevity. And if you look at the numbers, I think you'll be surprised. But when we keep citing Sid Luckman, I want to have like a top game-changing quarterback. And if in the next 5 years, like that's Justin Fields, and they're not just winning with defense and running the football,
yeah,
I'll go Bears on that one. So that wasn't so rapid fire. I'm sorry.
No. That's okay. I like the logic. 120 at Wrigley or a 705?
These days, 705.
705. Okay.
Yeah. I did plenty of the 120s as growing up, and I still love a Friday 120 or whatever time they're doing, but I like the night game. I love the atmosphere.
What's a favorite cheat day meal for you if calories don't count?
Oh, it's pizza. It's pizza all day, every day.
Pizza. Thick stuff, Chicago. I mean, what's your go-to?
Thin crust tavern style. I don't rage against, like, I'm a Chicagoan, but I don't. Like I'll have deep dish maybe once every 3-4 months. Mm-hmm. I'm thin crust once a week, you know, tavern crust. I think that's the most underrated food in Chicago is a tavern style pizza.
The bad news is you can only eat at one Chicago restaurant for a year. Where are you going?
I'm paying homage to David Flom, Matty Moore at Chicago Cut. They've been good to me. They've been good to the Cubs. And I'll go there.
Great choice. Superstitions when it comes to work or life?
Stupid stuff. Stuff that may even go over the top that wouldn't even be superstitions that you would probably say you need a therapist for that. I had a lucky pen for many years doing the show. If you can believe that, Waddle knows this story. It's and when I lost it, I freaked I freaked out. Like, it ruined my, not day, it ruined my week. And I still think about that lucky pen. Dumb, dumb stuff like that, where you would say, Sylvie, you're not sane.
Most likable Cubs team in your lifetime, say, other than the World Series year?
15 or 84. 84 is my first love. We always have the first kiss, 84. I love that team. But 15, the joyride and seeing the process play out of what we all wanted and expected and hoped for with Theo Epstein, that was glorious. Beating the Cardinals.
Doesn't get any better than that.
No. 15.
Mark, thank you. I can't thank you enough for taking the time. You and Waddle are phenomenal together. Your show is a must listen for anybody. My wife tunes in. I think that speaks volumes to you guys. No, I mean it. I mean, you appeal to such a broad audience and you don't need to hear this from me, but do such a phenomenal job. So thank you for weighing in with us. I really, really, really was looking forward to this and enjoyed the time.
Me too. And thank you for doing what you did at Wrigley. And, you were our soundtrack. I always tell that to Len Casper, play-by-play voices, to walk into that building, like I told you, the memories that I had, the sights and the sounds, and to hear your voice for 10 years during all those glory days and playoff wins and everything like that. And knowing that you've always been a fan, and whether we tweet each other, it's appreciated. The friendship's appreciated. And thanks for thinking of me to have me on your pod.
Well, coming from you, that means a lot. Mark Silverman, Locked On Cubs. More Cubs talk next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.